have no idea what loss is. You have no idea what loss is.
I reckon it's got something to do with that girl.
It's got everything to do with that little girl.
I can take care of myself.
How many close calls have we had?
Can't be any worse out there. Can it? Every guy in this room is staring at you right now. Maybe they're staring at you. Maybe they're jealous of you. I'm just a girl. Not a threat. Oh, Ellie. I think they should be terrified of you.
Welcome to the world of The Last of Us. It's Entertainment Talks podcast for the Naughty Dog video game series and the HBO on Max and Sky Atlantic television series. I'm your host Matthew. Joining me today, my co-host is David. How's it going?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Good, good. This is for The Last of Us Season 2, Episode 6. It is the penultimate episode of the season. We've reached a big checkpoint with that. It's called The Price, Season 2, Episode 6. I'm going to switch things around this week. I would like to go first because I've had some opinions that have been boiling in the old brain. And not that I think that you'll influence my opinion, I just would like to go first. So
go for it.
I think this episode is a masterpiece. I love this episode to death. I almost, because we're recording a day late because of my stupid football team.
That was worth watching, waiting for, wasn't it?
Oh dear, we'll talk about that in the housekeeping. Because of all that, I did have obviously like a bit of extra time to sort of think about the episode. I almost did want to watch it a fourth time because I just had that extra day, but I didn't get around to doing that today. I think this episode's a masterpiece. I think what it goes for, it absolutely nails. It caused me to cry in the same spots three times. By three times, I mean in three different watches. Although there was more than one scene that I cried at anyway. And I said this on the spoiler-free review. Of course, that's when I've seen the episode once. That's after the first watch. And I said, even with material that I was expecting to be emotional towards, because, again, we didn't know exactly how this episode would go, but for the game audience, which is me, we could guess what was likely going to be in this episode, including one thing I predicted that I was correct about, which we'll talk about in a minute. But the fact that I can see these scenes, technically, some of these ones I haven't got to in my half playthrough yet, but most of them I have. That I can go through that material that many times, so 7.5 in case anybody doesn't know the number, and then watch it three times, and then on each watch have the exact same reaction, even though in the second and third watch I know when things are going to come up, I know how the scenes are going to play out because I've seen the episode already, I think is just really remarkable. And it is somewhat because, of course, I already have an emotional attachment to that material and it's not new to me, but you could have done it differently. You could have messed it up, which they did very, very far from messing it up. I think one other opinion I gave on the spoiler-free review, and I don't know what the other four episodes would be. I think this is a top five all-time TV episode. Now, I know in regards to this show, at least so far, of course, we've got one episode left and then at least one more season. A lot of people consider season one, episode three, the Bill and Frank episode, to be a top five all-time TV episode. You can just pop that one in there with the rest of them and then decide for yourself what the other three episodes could be, because off the top of my head, I don't know what those would be and I don't know where these two episodes would sit in a top five, but I would argue for them and throw them in there. Absolutely love this episode. They made a few little changes, a few little tweaks. There was a lot of stuff that made sense. I don't think there's anything in the episode I didn't like. I mean, the way I'm talking about it, it makes that quite obvious. And one opinion I've been sitting on, and I mentioned this as well in the spoiler-free review, but I said, okay, I'll watch the episode two more times. I'll have that opinion in the back of my mind. I think Neil Druckmann might be the best writer we've got in the industry. Now, let me explain why, because obviously that's quite a big thing to say, because there's how many writers in this industry? There's a lot. And this isn't me saying, like, oh, he's better than Vince Gilligan, he's better than, you know, all the other... Obviously, we're full of tons of talented writers across the industry, and I'm talking specifically TV, games, and films. Books is a different thing, but whatever. There's something that he does. Now, maybe it's just I have a personal appreciation for the way he does a particular thing. There's the way that he writes... This is going to sound maybe silly. It's the way that he writes humans, and it's the way that he gives this very particular human touch. Now, I'll tell you when I started noticing this, because it was much later than what you might think. So in 2016 was when I first played the first Last of Us, and then obviously 2020, played the second game, all that kind of thing, and then obviously went through both of those a bunch of times, season one, whatever. And then I mentioned both on Geek Town this week and on obviously a podcast recently, I've recently gone through all 15 of Naughty Dog's games. Now, Neil Druckmann's not involved in all 15 of them, but there's a very key point in both Naughty Dog's development and Uncharted's development and Last of Us's development, where he comes in Uncharted 4. Now, I think when I recently went through that game, which was a few weeks ago, whenever I did the podcast, and there was just something immediate, even within like the opening sequence of Uncharted 4, that I noticed that just struck me very differently. And that is the moment, because that took a long time for that to kind of click into my mind. And he is particularly one of the writers of this episode. He also directed this episode as well. So obviously his writing DNA and his directing DNA is all over this episode, and it's clear as day. Does that mean, I think, like, okay, let's say you rebooted Breaking Bad, that he could write Breaking Bad better than Vince Gilligan? I don't know. But then if you look and you see, okay, Neil's story is The Last of Us, Vince's story is Breaking Bad. You also then have things like, okay, Kojima over on Metal Gear. And there's lots of different writers that have their own particular ways of doing things. Like, for example, if you did get Vince or Neil to write, let's say, a new Metal Gear game, it probably won't come off the same way as a Kojima Metal Gear game, because again, just you've just got different brains you're kind of working with. But as far as this goes in terms of like a gritty, grounded, realistic show, which is what it's going for, and the game itself goes for that, but the show tries to ground it even more and make it feel, you know, even more real and even more realistic, what he goes for with that particular human touch, I think he's the best at that. So anyway, with all that being said, David, what did you think of this episode?
I thought this episode was great. I really, really enjoyed it. It's funny how the sort of two best episodes so far across the entire show have been the two bottle episodes, basically.
Mm. I mean, probably the two with the least infected as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's been really just about writing the narratives and the character development and of these people. And I mean, what this proves as well, when you go to Neil and Craig's writing, I mean, they did both write this episode along with Hayley Gross. But what it does go to show is it's not just because, oh, it's Joel back. You know, it's not just because it's Joel and Ellie who are characters that we really love, because otherwise the Bill and Frank episode in the first season wouldn't have worked so well. So, you know, it's not that that's doing it. There is something about the way that they managed to write these bottle episodes and make them work so, so well that really it makes them stand out. How, you know, arguably how they should do, you know, if you're going to put a bottle episode in, it needs to serve some purpose. Walking Dead. And it needs to, and I mean, this absolutely does, because it shows you, you know, we've had this question since the beginning about why Ellie is so upset with Joel. What was the incident that caused that? Because clearly there was something, you know, and the revelation last week that she knew what Joel had done, and we assumed that that was part of it, but now we get to see how that played out. And it's just beautifully done, you know, with them taking it through the years of Ellie's birthday, and you see that relationship deteriorate over that period. It's just wonderfully done. I mean, it's a really, really strong episode, and it just enjoyed everything. I did want to ask, what is any of that in the game? Is there a most flashback of this, sequence? Yeah. It is. There is a flashback sequence in the game as well. Okay.
Not all of this episode, but a good big chunk of it is, yeah.
Because I know there are certain characters in here which aren't in the game as well. So, I was just wondering whether, because there were certain points of it where I was looking and going, I can see that playing out in the game quite well. So I just wondered how much of that transposed across, because obviously with the Bill and Frank episode, that was entirely outside of the game, pretty much. It's just a phenomenal, phenomenal episode of TV, this. And hats off to Neil for directing this one, and Neil Haley and Craig for writing it. It's just superb.
Yeah, fully agree, and then some. Every single bit of the video game stuff they went for here, they absolutely nailed. The new additions fit in perfectly. There's even a scene. I want to mention the sort of purpose of it here, but not like dissect it, because we'll do that when we get to the scene. The porch scene, the actual specific part where she comes back and where they have that conversation, is much later in the game, but, and this is what I've been predicting, when did I start predicting that they might do this? I think it was my episode one of season two, because you know I've been doing the spoiler predictions.
Yes.
And that sort of thing, which again is taking what we get from each episode, using that as essentially information, looking at scenes that we haven't had, and ones that are yet to come. And there was a lot of guessing in terms of, where will this birthday episode come in? And then, because it involves so much of Joel and Ellie's past, it makes complete sense to slot that in there rather than... Because that porch scene is much, much later in the game, and it works for what it does where it does it there. And it was interesting because Neil essentially said the same thing about it that I did, because I watched a 10-minute video where he was talking about directing this episode, and he said, because you've got years in between seasons and people struggle to like remember stuff because people go years without watching shows, it makes sense to just pull that back and then just include it as one big flashback episode, which not only makes sense, but I think works perfectly. And that is again where you've got this kind of... Because of the format, you're having to tell this second part story in. And what I mean by second part is second game. Because you're telling it in such a different format and in such a different time format as well. Because you could play this game over a long weekend and get the whole story within, two and a bit days. Whereas we're going to be told this story over possibly 4 years. Week to week over 4 years, which is much, much different. And so that makes a ton of sense. Anyway, we'll talk about that more when we get to it, because we have some scenes to break down. And I tried to add a few more little notes and bits like that. I mean, the thing is, I sort of realized this when I was doing part of this process. There's so many, particularly in this episode again, there's so many lines that you could pick out, and you could pick out the big meaning of and what it means in the bigger scope, because that's how these lines work. And as much as I would love to, like, literally sit down and talk about each line in the episode, that would just take ages and ages. Yes. That's just, yeah. So I've written down certain little bits, but we can't cover everything. So, because I feel like I could do a three-hour podcast on each episode. Just on, like, the lines and how they feed back into stuff and... all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's take a break. We'll come back, do some housekeeping and talk about my stupid team. And then we'll break down this episode. Sorry, just before we do actually do that, I feel like, and I'll explain what I mean by this, I feel like my brain has been pulled a bit all over the place this week, because you've got, there's this amazing Again, like I said, masterpiece of an episode. That was on Sunday. Then there was this Europa League game coming up. Then Yellow Jackets gets renewed finally for season 4. That's brilliant. And then sort of just after that and in between this and then, dealing with the wild swinging emotions of like, oh great, this cup final, let's see how that goes, and then this amazing episode. So in the last couple of days I've been like, oh yeah, this thing that really sucks, oh this thing that's really great, and then Yellow Jackets gets renewed, and then there's a bunch of stuff that happened. So that was interesting, to say the least. Anyway, we'll be back in a second.
Hi there. If you're looking to get started with a website of your own and a domain name, we've got good news for you. With our affiliate link with Kualu, you can click on that link, which is in your show notes, which is for our affiliate link. You can go over to Kualu to get started with your website and domain name today. They've also got a very handy chat support system, which is usually in the bottom right hand corner, to send messages back and forth to Kualu if you'd like to ask them for help to get started with your domain name and website today. So that's Kualu, and you can use them to get started with your website and domain name today. Thank you very much to Kualu for this affiliate link. Hi there, if you'd like to get rid of the ads in Entertainment Talks podcasts and listen to the ad-free versions of our episodes, we've got good news for you there as well. You can subscribe to Entertainment Talk at either the $5 level tier or $10 level tier. The $5 level tier will get you access to all of Entertainment Talk's previous ad-free podcasts and the future ad-free podcasts that we make in the month that you're subscribed for. If you also subscribe to us at the $10 level tier, that will get you that benefit that I've just mentioned, and it'll also grant you access to request a review for 2 episodes of a TV show and a general discussion on that show, or a film review of your choice. So if there's a TV show out there or a film that we've not covered perhaps and you'd like our opinion on it, we can watch 2 episodes of that TV show or film review. So it's one of either of those per month. Of course, if you continue subscribing each month, you can pick a TV show, then a film the next month, and so on and so forth. This is a great way to support Entertainment Talk, get your ad-free podcasts, and also get some reviews of your choice. Thank you very much for supporting us, and thank you for listening. Back to the show.
All right, recently on Entertainment Talk, due to a podcast issue we had before, I am in the process of gradually, and it will be a gradual process, slowly replacing certain old episodes. Now, because I think at some point this year, maybe when you come back from holiday, possibly, or something, to getting back to Breaking Bad, because that's something that we need to do, and then but we're obviously going through Last of Us at the moment. We weren't going to do both of those at the same time, so I'm going to figure out a way to, because I have access to all the episodes. We haven't lost any podcasts. It's just some places where you play some of our episodes, they're playing the wrong ones in certain situations. So I am currently working on fixing that, but it's not going to be a quick thing. Anyway, I got around to getting the first one out. So if you want to go back, listen to our coverage of the start of Breaking Bad, speaking of Vince Gilligan, you can listen to, let's say, the new version. I've not re-edited it or anything. I've just simply re-uploaded it into a fresh post for season 1, episode 1 for Breaking Bad. I don't know when I'm going to get around to releasing the others, but that's going to happen at some point soon. So you can go back and check the start of that journey out. Speaking of my stupid team, we who sit 16th next to Tottenham, who sit 17th, both of us ended up in a cup final. Now, if you're wondering if the actual football was any good in terms of two teams that are 16th and 17th, no, it wasn't. Not going to break the game down here because I did that obviously over there, but we lost 1-0, and well done to Tottenham. They adapted in the game. We did not, and we did not do enough, and they did, and they won. And this manager needs to be sacked, because you cannot have no trophies and sit 16th/17th. So we'll see what happens with that. So that was the cup final. On to happier memories. Obviously with The Last of Us, spoiler predictions. I had one episode left to do predictions for, and I tried to come up with like different scenarios and things like that, in terms of, again, the information we had. And we of course had some new information, because there's the new promos that we got, and they showed us certain bits and pieces. So did my last, at least for this season, last predictions episode. I think I might do one after the next episode. Again, it depends what we get, where we end up, that sort of thing. For season 2, episode 7, all the way through to season 3, episode 1, what I've been trying to kind of do in the last couple of ones, predict how the season will end, how that will obviously dovetail into the next season, and how all those bits and pieces may or may not come together. So, yeah, that's the newest spoiler predictions episode for that. And then if you want to hear me talk about the episode spoiler-free or go back to the one that I mentioned, my spoiler-free review is obviously still out as well. That's for season 2, episode 6 as well. On to better, interesting football memories. Last weekend, Crystal Palace beat Man City in the FA Cup final. And it was really, really great to watch. It's great to see the underdog win sometimes. I thought they played incredibly well. And yeah, their first, I think, ever major trophy. So congratulations to Crystal Palace. And got themselves into Europa League next season as well. So they've been doing much better. And big congratulations to them for beating Man City. It's not an easy thing to do, so congratulations to them. I did do my preview podcast for the Europa League final, if you want to go back and listen to that. Over on some trailer talk and some DC talk, we did have a new Superman trailer. I wondered when we would get a new one. And we did have a trailer as well for Ironheart, so I talked about both of those. Last week on Gaming Talk, we talked about GTA 6. There was a second trailer that came out. We had some information about Battlefield. We talked about IP. And Robert talked about Expedition 33. And I talked about Final Fantasy 7 Rebirth. So you can check that one out. And that's what we'll be doing recently on entertainmenttalk.org and on podcast platforms. Let's get to the recap. In 1983, young Joel and Tommy live in fear of their abusive father, Javier. Played by Tony Dalton is his name, who, again, speaking of Breaking Bad, was in Better Call Saul, wasn't he, as Lalo.
Yes, he was.
Actor. Also, speaking of Naughty Dog connections, he's going to be in Intergalactic. Not that we know much about that right now. That's Neil Druckmann's next directed game, which we've been talking about here and there.
He also plays the Swordman in the MCU. He was in Daredevil and Hawkeye.
Yeah, yeah, so... lots of interesting connections. And here he's popping up as Javier, Joel and Tommy's father, abusive father. After Tommy was ripped off while trying to buy a marijuana, Joel instigated a fight and the two ran into trouble. Javier does not beat them and instead gives Joel a beer, which was the same beer, not that I actually drank or ate anything while watching this for the first time because I was distracted by the episode, was the same beer that I had next to me. So that was weird. I looked at it and I was like, wait a minute, is that what I've got next to me? And then I had a quick glance to my right and it was. So there you go. Revealing he was abused more violently by his own father. There was a smacking that took place in a car and that sort of thing. Sharing his guilt about his own violence, Javier says that he hopes Joel will do better with his own children, which is a theme that goes through this episode as well. Not in the game. None of this stuff you don't really hear about. Obviously, Tommy and Joel in the game and all that sort of thing. But the father angle is not really there. You don't really... You get a lot of hints between Joel and Tommy about just their past in general. Whether it was the 20 years between the outbreaks and whatever. Or somewhat of their past. There's a lot of like hint to that history there, but not specific to this kind of like father stuff. So this was particularly for what this does later in the episode as well. This was a great piece to put in. Yeah, it's short, it's sweet, it's to the point. Again, there's a lot of lines that mean a lot of things. But the most important one is, I think, you know, I hope that you do better when it's your turn later in life, so to speak. Yeah, cool to see Tony Dalton here again. Brilliant actor. He's been great in everything I've seen him in so far. Particularly, like, Lalo was a really kind of fun, cool character in Better Call Saul, wasn't he? I remember there was a shot of, what was it? He drives up to a gate, he, like, rolls a window down, and he's doing this little smile. So, very, very, very good actor. The two guys here who are playing the young Joel and Tommy, I don't have their names in front of me, but they were really, really great as well. And if you want to go back, not that I'd know where this would fit in the story, but again, new ideas and all that sort of stuff. If you were going to tell, like, let's say a different story or a new bit of a story or something about Tommy and Joel, you could definitely use these two actors again if you want to tell like another piece of their story from this time period. I think they fit the roles really, really great. We didn't see as much of Tommy, obviously, he's there very briefly and then sort of goes upstairs, but pretty good start to the episode. What do you think?
Yeah, it sets things up nicely, sort of tonally, for what we're looking at for this episode, which is Joel's relationship with his child, essentially, and you know, this sort of thing of you need to do better with your own children than your parents did with you. I mean, that's ultimately the you should be the goal for most parents, I think. and I mean, yeah, so it's a really nice sort of interesting way of setting this up, of showing their childhood and, you know, how abusive that relationship was, but also how their father was sort of obviously trying to be better. So, you know, I thought that was an interesting way to start it off, certainly.
Mm. Yeah. Very, very good. Then we cue into the intro, and then 2 months after arriving in Jackson, Wyoming, Ellie burns her arm to cover her bite for her birthday. Joel gifts her a cake and a custom-made guitar. Ellie asks him to perform a song, and he sings Future Days, same song that Ellie was singing in the theatre for last episode. I know we accidentally skipped over the sort of theatre bit last week, but
yeah,
that was all really lovely, and this ties into that, which was nice. And the cake comes from, I put Seth here, I suppose to say Seth, as does some of the items Joel needs for guitar. And I was thinking, as you get this little montage of Joel doing this, that I'm sure people would, if they would watch like Pedro/Joel doing like ASMR stuff. I think people probably would watch that, but it reminded me, as somebody who watches ASMR basically every day, that fit in quite nicely. Let's rewind back to the start of this though. Yeah, obviously the whole bite mark, I mean the whole entire cure/bit storyline is obviously explored in this episode thoroughly with multiple conversations. But this is a good way to kind of kick that bit off in terms of her coming back, and like I kind of love the differences between Tommy and Joel's reaction. Tommy's like, hey, well, this kind of happened, and it's a bit where, what was it, Joel is like, hey, how did someone let this happen? And Tommy's like, what do you mean let, like it's just a thing that happened and I'm giving her back to you to kind of look after her. And then Joel's got the kind of concerned dad thing going on, and it's kind of the start of that. So how I always understood this worked is, so when she kind of got bitten at one point, and then she obviously used it, I think in the game they specifically say chemical burn, to like cover that up, but then there's the thing here of like she wants to wear short sleeves and that sort of stuff, and then later on, like, tries to have a better solution, which is to get this tattoo later on in the story as well. I thought they both handled this bit relatively well though, and it was an interesting way to kind of again set that up for some later discussions. What do you think of this initial burn on the arm scene and how they did?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, it sort of says something about Ellie, the fact that she's prepared to go to that sort of length to cover up the fact that, you know, she's got that bite, and you know, she's prepared to sort of, you know, go for it and burn her arm to cover the bite up, which I mean is one thing. So yeah, there's that. And I mean, it's quite the whole guitar making thing is quite cute and sweet as well, and you know, Joel sort of trying to sing, and I think this is really lovely, this sort of scene. But the sort of her burning her arm, I think shows where Ellie is and the type of character she is.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the length she's prepared to go to as well, which I think is quite interesting. So yeah, I really like this scene. I thought it was and the birthday cake being spelt wrong as well, I thought it was quite funny. But yeah, so the whole thing, it's just really great. And the fact that she sort of dives into the birthday cake with her hands as well was such a sort of teen Ellie thing to do.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. But yeah, the making the guitar from scratch was really cool. I quite like the sort of exchange, obviously, between Seth and Joel as well. Cool to see the kind of, and not that you see it on screen, but the scavenger sort of Joel, the smuggler sort of Joel, be doing his thing, because he's like, hey, that's because I kind of know where to look and you don't. So that was cool. Again, reminder, every single time Seth, not that I think it's going to be too many times, although I have no idea, because Seth's scenes, the last thing you see him do in the game is give that sandwich to Ellie, which was what, back in episode two, one, at the beginning of the season. Every single time he pops up now on screen is original material for everybody. So I thought this was, but it fit well with what they were trying to do with that. So, but yeah, the whole Eli thing, and hey, I hope he bakes better than what he spells. And she's like, He does. I thought that was pretty nice. I was going to say something else about the guitar, but I've forgotten. So, but that was really great as well. Yeah, this Future Days thing. So, again, because you've played around with the timeline slightly, because this happens slightly earlier in the game. It happens in and around, you know, when he went to her makeshift garage house thing?
Yeah.
And he notices the guitar's in the corner and there's the strings there. There's a part in the game where he goes into her house garage thing, and the two of them have like an awkward conversation about, first of all, it's about patrols, and then he does this clock joke. Says, what's the downside to eating a clock? What's the joke again that he says? What's the downside to eating a clock? It's time consuming, which I thought was pretty good. So you have all those kind of bits. And then, because she kind of, at that point in the game, is like, okay, Joel, I'm going to sleep soon. I've got patrol next morning. And he's trying to just awkwardly get any conversation out of her.
Yeah.
And then that's where he kind of picks up the guitar and he's like, hey, I've just got this just one thing I want to show you. And then he plays Future Days to her. So that's how it kind of fits in with the game. And again, for gamer people, when it was okay, went in there, picked up the guitar, walked out, everybody freaked out of like, oh my god, they're skipping past Future Days. It's like, okay, we're gonna get the flashback stuff, it will probably fit in there, and it did. So it kind of makes me laugh a little bit when some of the things that are a bit more obvious for them to include in the game, just because they haven't included it in the exact moment that you think they might do, gamers tend to panic and be like, oh my god, they skipped over it, what are we gonna do? So this was a great way to sort of fit that in there as well. And yeah, it's a beautiful song. Obviously, the most kind of important line there, if I was to ever lose you, I'd surely lose myself. Which, again, if you just take that line and just spread it across Joel's life, really, in terms of everything that happened with Ellie, everything's happened with Sarah, how that is in the future going to tie into Ellie losing Joel. And then obviously you've got things like Ellie losing Riley and other people as well. I mean, that can be applied to, you know, multiple characters as well. But particularly how that applies to Joel and the whole fatherhood daughter thing, between both him and Sarah and him and Ellie and all that sort of stuff. Because you've got to remember as well, like, all these bits, all these flashback bits, this was kind of, now while Sarah got to, what would you say, she's probably young teenager, probably like Ellie game one season one age, but not to like the 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th birthday. I don't think Sarah got around to being that age, because he's now able to experience that with Ellie, and it's this wonderful thing for him. So yeah, what do you think of the lyrics there in the song?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great song. It's a Pearl Jam song, I think, Future Days. But yeah, I mean, great song and very appropriate for Joel. Like you say, it's sort of spread across his life. So yeah.
Especially because, like, I mean, we don't quite know his life before Sarah, apart from the whole father thing here. But like, yeah, Sarah dies if he were to lose blah, 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 whatever. And then he lost himself for 20 years, then found Ellie. Mm-hmm. And now the same thing applies. So yeah, brilliant. I think because there was three different times I cried in the episode. I think this was the first one. Not as much as one that I did for later, but damn. So this was the first one. It's interesting because, you know, with the more action bits that we had in episodes 4 and 5, I didn't get as emotional with those. So it's almost like, because I hadn't cried for a couple of episodes, bang, here you go. Here's a bunch of stuff for you to get emotional at. So yeah, very, very good. Where are we now? For her 16th birthday. So I love how we go, like we're gradually going through these in different chapters. I think they did that really well as well. Joel brings Ellie to an abandoned museum. On the way there, Joel notices her chatting a lot about Jesse a bunch and wonders what is going on there. Ellie laughs at this, and then she eventually finds and climbs on a dinosaur. It's not often that you'll laugh at The Last of Us. You might sort of like smile at a nice human moment, like when someone's playing guitar for somebody or something. But I mean, I maybe can't count on one, maybe two hands, how many times I've actually laughed at The Last of Us, because, you know, it's not a comedy. But just the whole conversation and him kind of being like, yeah, I've got a keen eye for these things. She's like, no, you really don't. Which, by the way, this conversation is in the game, and I love that they included that here. It's included in a bit of a different scene, but I don't need to get into that here. It's essentially on the same, like, flashback birthday part anyway, so that's fine. But yeah, Joel, you missed the angle on that one. So I love as well, just. And again, the way that Bella is playing this, whenever anything kind of jokey adult comes up, because he's like, "Hey, have you heard of the birds and the beads? Birds and the bees," and she just outright is like, "Oh, what you mean, dicks and vaginas?" And he's like, "Oh my God!" So yeah, just yeah, brilliant, funny scene, and just, I love that conversation was in here. So, what do you think of this moment between them?
It's lovely, and what struck me about this episode was Bella in particular playing that younger version of
Oh,
Ellie
yeah.
again, and you know, the version that we knew from season one, and it shows you how different those two versions are. You know, the sort of much hardened, more hardened version that we've got of as her now, compared to that sort of 15-year-old version, 14-year-old version that we had in the first game. First season, sorry.
Yeah, first season, first game.
It's really interesting to see the difference there, and I kind of miss that kind of bantering relationship. And yes, it's evolved at this, but there was a lot more of that sort of stuff. And she does have that relationship with Dina these days, but you know, which is also very cute. But I do like these sort of conversations between her and Joel, and I sort of missed that from the first season. So I'm glad that they had a chance to bring that back in here.
Yeah, definitely. The thing is as well, from not that I have an issue with it, but from a visual standpoint with Bella. Now, you can cast anybody that you want for this role, right? But the difference here between when you're jumping from essentially 14 to 19 or whatever the different ages are, and in the game you can simply just swap out differently aged character models. Now, unless you were going to cast what, 4 or 5 different versions of Bella of Ellie and put them in, and then hope that that just worked the same way. Bella's having to kind of, because she's looking different in each different bit, cause of course she's getting a bit older and that sort of thing. And then there's a slightly different, like, not child mannerisms, but the sort of more teen, younger mannerisms that she's having to do. And then when she's cutting back to, you know, this more hardened sort of 19-year-old version. I even think down to sort of what they do with, like, you know, the hair and makeup costume department stuff, and how they just make her look slightly different in each of these different chapters. I think worked really, really well. So I thought that was great as well. But yeah, funny conversation between two of them. And again, for the dinosaur, yes, that's in the game as well. And I don't think you have to climb on it, but you can climb on it. And you get a sort of a similar reaction from Joel. What do you think of seeing this dinosaur? What did you think was gonna, I guess, come up or whatever?
Well, I mean, he was obviously taking her somewhere. I didn't know that that's where he was taking it, but I do love this and the scene that comes after it. That, you know, I mean, knowing how much she has this sort of love of space and you're sort of seeing that, or science, you know, come to life. And the fact that she's kind of, she's that excitable sort of teen version of Ellie. I mean, it is a very different performance to the older one. I just love how she sort of reacts and she's sort of playing, and when she jumps up onto the dinosaur and you can see the look of worry on Joel's face. And it's just, it's lovely. It's really, really lovely.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a brilliant, brilliant moment. All right, then we cut to the space part of this, and we'll talk about something else in a second here as well, which a lot of people noticed. Sitting in the Apollo 15 model, she listens to a cassette tape of the Apollo 11 liftoff and imagines herself traveling to space. A dinosaur... Okay, before we actually talk about that wonderful, beautiful moment and, again, all the fantastic parts of it, in the game, in between the dinosaur and this space section, there is a full dinosaur section that she goes through. Now, in one of the behind-the-scenes videos and multiple photos that were shared around and all this kind of stuff, they had a full set created. There was a full, like, behind-the-scenes video where there was a bit with a hat that everybody, the gamers, kind of know about, and that was all there. And no one seems to know why that was cut out of this episode. Now, thankfully, it didn't make this episode worse. Again, if you listen to what I said at the top of the show, it clearly didn't make the episode worse. Some people are wondering if maybe it gets used later. That's possible. I didn't really dig into predictions to that and to figure out where that went. I might do that in the next one. Or whether it would just be a deleted scene. But, because I want to talk about the oddity of this and then talk about the actual beautiful part with the space thing. So, yeah, because the video that everybody sort of saw, and it wasn't some sort of, like, leaked video online either. It was, like, in a lot of different public places. And no one seems to quite know why they cut it out of the episode. David, I know you don't know what scene I'm talking about, but...
Just been looking it up. It sounds like, according to... not sure who they're interviewing here, but there is an interview I found with.
That was quite a few different ones. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it was one of the writers. Apparently, it got cut out for pacing, and I guess it must have just slowed things down at that point, which I can sort of see. I mean, there is one thing about this episode is it is very, very well paced, and you know, for whatever reason, they decided that particular scene slowed things down, so they cut it out.
I wonder how long the scene was.
I don't know. I mean, it is one of those things that it's that sort of balance when you're doing this sort of thing of, do you leave something in basically as fan service, or do you take it out because it's not really serving the story and you can get rid of it and you can get to the next bit? So there are times when that happens, you know. There's a phrase, kill your darlings, which is sort of, it applies to editing, which is, you know, there needs to be a reason for the thing to be there. And sometimes there'll be scenes that you absolutely love, but they end up getting taken out, even though there was absolutely nothing wrong with it, just because it slows the progression down. And if they felt that was the case, that seems like the only reason it was taken out. I suspect at some point it will show up as either an extra on YouTube, or, I mean, I'm sure they'll release it somewhere. I was going to say DVD extra, but nobody buys DVDs. You know, the sort of, if you buy a sort of streaming, like, you know, version of it or something, I don't know. I'm sure it will appear somewhere at some point, even if they don't slot it back into the actual show, because I'm not sure exactly how you do that, unless they do another one of these flashback things. But it would be weird to slot that back in.
I'm not sure where that would fit back into it.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah. I doubt it will get slotted back in, but I suspect that they may release it online or something somewhere. So we'll see. But yeah, it doesn't seem to have been anything wrong with it. The reason seems to have just been pacing, you know.
Yeah.
And that happens.
So yeah, I guess we'll see what happens with all of that. It's nice to know that they like didn't just go, hey, let's just forget about it completely and not bother trying to do it. There's at least that element to it. It's just the, I guess, the mystery as to why it was cut or whatever. So you got that bit. Noting as well the rock that was used to select, if you want to call it that, a helmet. Younger, better mannerisms coming through here from Ellie, I thought was really, really great. It was interesting that that was there, because in the game, the helmets are on the outside of the glass.
Oh.
And
well, it makes more sense for them to be in the inside of the glass.
That's sort of true, yeah. And you just go up to it, you press, because you get to pick one of three or four, I think it is. I usually just go for the first one on the left. So, and then, yeah, you just pick it up, you put it on, and then so it's the same thing, you just smash the window. I almost wonder if kind of, because the technology with the second game is obviously much better because it's a different console and all that sort of thing, you can smash a lot of glass in a lot of different places for like different reasons. So you can smash like cabinets to get, you know, like stuff out of different shelves, and you can smash like car windows to see if there's any supplies in there, and other similar things. I almost, the way this window was smashed did remind me of the sort of mechanic of that in the game. I almost wondered if that was a wink and a nod to that. I didn't think that was a deliberate wink and nod, but it sort of felt like it was in that direction. So, yeah, interesting little touch. And then we have the actual scene itself. She sits in there, puts the helmet on, again, has this sort of childlike expression. Says it smells like space, which was nice. They go in, they climb in there together. She listens to this tape, and it's the full countdown thing, all that. It goes nice and silent. She imagines herself in space. Brilliant, brilliant bit of lighting here as well. There's like a bit of light that sort of glares past the helmet at one point, which I thought was really nicely done. Again, saw the behind the scenes videos on this part, and let's just say they put a lot of effort into making this, even just this one piece of the episode, come to life, because they had to come up with like different parts of lighting and the way that sort of like goes past the helmet and stuff. And again, as someone who doesn't usually appreciate visual stuff, there was a lot of like great visuals and great cinematography again in this episode. There's a lot of like just really great shots of stuff, and but it's almost more important in this bit because, because when you are in the game and you do get essentially a copy and paste of this same scene, which is great, you get the light that sort of shines past as well. So the same sort of cinematography attempt as well. I kind of liked the little detail, and I liked it in the game when it first came up, when he pulls out this cassette tape, and I remember kind of thinking like, okay, where did you get that from? And he doesn't outright say, but he sort of, I went through a lot of trouble to get this, and I didn't need to know any more about that. I didn't need to, like, you know, 3-minute flashback or something, but you know, he probably has as well. And because of, again, how much he loves Ellie, and you can clearly see across all these birthdays how much effort he's putting in to, you know, love her and all this sort of thing, like with all the cakes, the guitar made pretty much from scratch, this entire birthday sequence thing, the tape, everything else. Yeah, it's very, very clear to see, which makes it sad when things kind of fall apart a bit later. Anyway, what did you think of one of the most beautiful parts of the game being brought to life here?
Yeah, it is absolutely lovely, this scene. And the sort of wonder of it, and the way they did the lighting, where it's sort of almost ethereal, and she, you know, clearly she's imagining it because she's not going into space, but just the way it's done is so beautiful. I had exactly the same thought where he pulls out that tape and they have that sort of line of, I went through a lot of trouble to get that. I mean, I don't need to see why. It does have me curious as to how he got hold of it, because I was sort of thinking, how do you get a tape of the Apollo 13? You know, there are things like the old Encarta DVDs or, you know, CD-ROMs for older people among you, which would have had things like that on. But then you've got to find a computer that will operate it with a CD drive, you know, all that sort of stuff. you know, so, and or you've got to go into a library and see if you can find it in the, like, space section and find a tape that might have it. I mean, there's, I'd love to know, just from Neil, how he, if he has any idea how he got it, you know, if he could actually explain that. Just out, purely out of curiosity, I don't need to actually see it on screen. It's fine that it wasn't there. I just, it was one of those things that stuck out to me. But the scene itself, I think, is just beautiful. And it really shows how much Joel cares about Ellie, how much he loves Ellie, and the lengths he will go to for her. I mean, we knew that sort of already from what he did at the end of season one. But, I mean, this really is so sweet. And it's so beautifully acted between the pair of them. And I just love this scene. I thought it was absolutely stunning.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember if... I know I keep bringing it up, but it's kind of emotionally important because I cried at this bit as well. So that might be four times because there's two other bits after this that I did as well. So again, like I said, because I didn't cry during episodes 4 and 5 because it was more action and more intense stuff. I guess you just saved it all up for this episode.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it was four times. Not that the count actually matters, but yeah, I thought it was 3, but it was actually 4. Maybe it was 5. Who actually knows? Anyway, yeah, this was beautiful and brilliant. And again, the fact that you can make me get emotional even on the second and the third watch, the days after, is just incredible. I don't know what else to say about it apart from it's just incredible. And it was beautifully done. And yeah, just wonderful. On her 17th birthday, this is when things get a little bit worse. Again, the not swinging emotions of The Last of Us, but the different emotions of The Last of Us. On her 17th birthday, Joel stumbles into Ellie's room after she has smoked marijuana and been intimate with Kat. If you remember her from the season premiere episode when they went out on that patrol part. Who has tattooed a moth on Ellie's arm. Ellie shares her intention to move into the garage. They argue, Joel concedes... but Joel concedes the distance between them keeps growing. Now, I want to give credit to, what's her name, Tabitha, over on the over on Bold Moves, not Walking Dead, Last of Us podcast. She pointed out something that I didn't notice, but I wanted to sort of bring up here. So, wasn't my thing that I noticed? I'm just giving credit to somebody else. The pulling and the pushing here of the mattress is very interesting because it's kind of almost, and again, I'm borrowing this from somebody else, but I've given credit and not pretended I came up with it by myself. Kind of like she wants to push out of the relationship maybe, but he wants to push back in. I think that's a very interesting way to kind of look at that, and that makes sense if that's what they were going for. She's getting older, she's getting into more teenage stuff, and sometimes that's going to include things that the parents don't like. And it felt kind of awkward here for Kat because she's just kind of trying to do what she's doing and whatever, and trying to explain like, "Hey, yeah, it's not done." And she's like, "Oh yeah, no, I'm gonna go." But again, going from this beautiful space moment thing to just like this is them sort of falling apart, and she wants to move out and all this sort of thing. This part isn't in the game because Kat's not in the game either. She's mentioned, but. Obviously, this is more of the story bits from her. So, yeah, it's just sad to see the rift between them keep going. Even though in here there is a bit of kind of... like neither of them really storm off from each other. It's sort of, you want this thing, I can't really... like you can't do it right now. And I love how Joel comes up with the sort of... tries to come up with the practical stuff, which she's correct about. Like, okay, it's raining, it's the middle of the night, the thing's not even set up, you just practically can't even move in there right now. That's sort of his way of maybe pushing back on that conversation. Yeah, the start of the setup of I guess this is the garage origin, I suppose, as well. So yeah, what do you think of the rift between them here and everything else?
Yeah, I mean, really, at this point, it's more straight up teen stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, as yeah. Joel says, it's like, oh, you're going for like every teen cliche at once, you know, the sort of tattoo, smoking weed, experimenting with girls, you know, all this sort of stuff. And you know, that's it feels more like, you know, rather than a huge rift, it feels like sort of normal teenage stuff. I mean, Joel, what an idiot. He clearly can hear something is going on in that room, and just basically barges in, and you're like, really? That's just, no, you don't want to do that. That's not a good idea.
Just on that point, by the way, the barging in, because that's a good point to make. With that, like, singular action, there's almost kind of, not that he won't let somebody else be in her life, but maybe he felt some sort of, like, threat from that, of, like, oh, there's someone, that's a little bit of the sense that I got from that, the sort of, oh, she's in, like, what's she doing? She's in there with someone else, and I'm not involved? Maybe I'm reading that incorrectly, but that's how that little moment came across to me, maybe.
I mean, I think maybe it is possible that she's, I mean, you can hear sort of giggling and stuff, and maybe he's concerned that she's in there with a boy, and, you know, in there with a boy leads to pregnancy, and that would be not good at a 17-year-old girl. So maybe it's that.
Could be that, yeah.
You know. But, yeah, it's still something that, could have sort of, knocked and waited a little bit before you kind of go barging into the room, you know? So yeah, that's sort of on Joel, that really, but a lot of this at this point feels more kind of, just sort of straight up teenage stuff, Ellie growing up, Ellie wanting her space, and that's sort of understandable, but he's struggling to let her go, obviously, as well. So you can see fractures starting to form in their relationship, but it's not the sort of huge cavernous gaping hole that is obviously there later on,
You gotta remember as well, and this is something I try to keep in my mind throughout the episode, from minute one, well, not necessarily minute one, but from the first Joel and Ellie scene up until the USWAR scene, she's got that conversation stewing in her mind the entire time as well. I mean, she might not have been thinking about that when, like, she was in the in the space thing, like, during those more happier moments, like the cake and the song, and, you know, she might not be thinking about them in that moment, but I'm sure during these more tense scenes, and certainly some bits in a moment, that's stewing in her mind the entire time as well. Because even if you, again, another key scene to remember, if you go back to episode one, that barn practice fight scene, and the whole, like, hey, Joel didn't want me, what's his name, Jesse explains about how, I didn't want to have to answer to Joel, when she, like, didn't care about that. Again, that conversation is stewing in her mind the entire time, and it's obviously contributing to her behavior throughout the whole thing. So, where do we go next? Patrol. Yes, on her 19th birthday, so kind of catching up with almost current time, with Ellie's suspicions surrounding Joel's story about the Fireflies, which is what I just mentioned, growing, Joel lets her join him on patrol. They encounter Eugene, who's been bitten, and begs Joel to let him see his wife Gail before he turns. Ellie convinces Joel to agree, and he promises her. Two key words to keep in mind from here until the next scene is, I guess, swearing and promising. Because he doesn't say, and I found that an interesting detail, how he doesn't say I swear, he just says I promise. And then obviously see the conclusion of that in the next part. So first time we've seen Eugene. Unfortunately, he's already dying by the time we see him in the show, but this is starting to feed back into I think it was episode one, Gail and Joel's discussion, and she says, you killed my husband, and we've all of us been wondering, because even for game people, wondering about, like, okay, what does that mean? What exactly happened? Was it some involving a bite? Was it involving, you know, because Eugene used to be a Firefly, was there something to do with the lie involved in there? Interestingly, that wasn't included in this part, but I think the actual resolution to what happens here with Eugene is great in terms of what they do. So you've got that bit as well. Ellie convinces Joel to agree and promises her. So this guy, now I don't remember The Matrix that much. It's been a while since I've seen it. He was in The Matrix, yes? This Joel?
Yes, yes.
Joey Pants, as everybody keeps calling him.
yeah, he played the he's basically the guy who's the turncoat in the Matrix, who sells the rebels out to the machines,
okay.
Because he wants to stay in the virtual world, in the Matrix. So yeah, I think he's in the first one.
Right.
So yeah, he's in that, and he was in Sopranos as well. I mean, Sopranos he had quite a big role in. Those are probably the two biggest things he's known for. But I mean, he's popped up in so many different shows in odd little, you know, bits and pieces as well over the years. He's voiced in Black Ops apparently as well, and Grand Theft Auto 3 and some other bits and pieces. So, you know, he's done voice work before. But yeah, I mean, he's a very, very good actor. Yeah, I mean, he's just one of the Daredevil movies and Bad Boys 2 as well. So yeah, I mean, he's one of those actors that's been sort of on TV and in films for many, many years. So yeah, he's a really solid actor, and it's an interesting little part for him to play for this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he does a wonderful job in it. And the Joel again just making the wrong choices. Because I mean, arguably there was no reason for him to. I mean, yes, they have rules, but it's one guy, and surely they could have kept him safe enough and kept him far enough away from Jackson for them to be able to, you know, do something, you know, radio ahead, get her to come out to make sure she's at the gate when they get there, or she's like, you know, half a mile away from the gate when they get there, so they can, and if he turns whilst they're there, they can protect them. I mean, you know, there were options. I think Ellie was absolutely right there, and Joel's like, no, we need to get rid of this guy, and you're like, oh, really? So yeah,
I suppose the thing is, it's like a bit of a coin flip in a way, because, okay, it could be safe, it could work, it might work, but, like, okay, you take him back to Jackson, Gail gets to see him, he gets to hear, because he was more concerned about, like, her last words as well. And although, obviously, Joel's very capable, Ellie's obviously at this age very capable as well, it does only take one thing to slip up to make that into a disaster, but then that is just
a
coin-flipped aspect of it. So,
and I mean, I think the stronger argument would have been actually, do you honestly want to us to take you back to her, and for her to have to see somebody shoot you in the head? You know, I mean, I think. Because obviously that's going to be the end result of it. You know, she is, or, you know, she's certainly going to hear the gunshot at that point, even if she opts not to stay and actually see it. Either way, he's dead. And I think, you know, there is a more convincing argument for say they shouldn't do it because the trauma that's going to put on his wife. I think that's a slightly more convincing argument for not taking him back, but which I think they could have made. But, you know, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I kind of feel that Joel maybe made the wrong choice there, but and maybe there was some way around it, but I don't know. I mean, you're right. It is one of those things that it does only take one little slip if he does turn, and, you know, that's a problem. And as we've seen before, I mean, they do communicate. So maybe having him there in turn would have drawn a hood. I mean, so yeah, I mean, maybe you are right. I don't know. It just feels like, you know, Joel sticking by the rules regardless. But I mean, the important thing is lying to Ellie about it. And that was
yep,
not the best thing to do, you know. As we see, as we go on to the rest of this.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. But for me, the whole debate of, like, should they have done it, should they have not, I don't think there's a right or a wrong answer. And I just think it's... And again, if you ask Neil Druckmann, he would say, what do you think? Because that's usually what he says about these things. I love the way he does that, like, because overall, years that I've been listening to him and Troy talk, for example, and on like director's commentary for the games and stuff. And they'll be talking during a cinematic, and Troy's like, "Hey, you presented this, you presented that. What was this and what was that?" And Neil just goes, "Well, what do you think?" So I, and again, it's not done in a sort of deliberate ambiguous sort of way. It's kind of just, okay, I presented you with information. What do you think is right, wrong, correct, this, that, and the other? Which ultimately is kind of one of the interesting, like, moral compass parts of The Last of Us, because people are going to do things. Do you think it's right, wrong? And there's not always a yes, no, correct, wrong answer. And I think that kind of applies here. So the debate of, like, okay, did Joel, you know, morally do the correct thing? I don't think there's a right or a wrong answer to that, really.
No, maybe not.
You know, different kind of angles. So, which again,
yeah,
The Last of Us is one of the many things The Last of Us is very good at doing. So,
yeah.
So you also got another, not another death, but it was, who did you predict again? Eugene, Mel, and Seth. That was who you picked, wasn't it? Because I was thinking about that.
Yes.
So, even though we had that kind of confirmed in episode one, but yep, yeah, he's officially down. So that's one down, maybe two to go. We'll see what happens with the other two characters. As she collects their horses, Joel leads Eugene away before executing him, which Ellie stumbles upon. On their way back, Joel tries to explain and justify his actions to Ellie. She gets even more of a realization and cries away from him. I love the sort of angle bits and pieces there of Ellie's just like not responding, and again the slow realization of, wait a minute, if he's doing this here, what does that mean in terms of what he said to me? And again, it's just stewing in her brain, and I just love the sort of development of that as well. I think that's great.
I should say one particular piece of direction from Druckmann on this, which I thought was absolutely stunning, was when Joel actually takes the shot, and you don't actually see it on camera, and you don't even hear the gunshot. It's an overhead view, and you see the birds fly up from over the tree canopy. And he even took the sound of the gunshot out of that as well. So literally all you see is those birds fly away. So you know the shot has happened. You know there's a sound going off there. And I thought that was an absolutely stunning bit of direction, as a really interesting way of doing that, and makes it, you know, I mean, Joel's not cruel, and you know, he took him to a place that he considered beautiful, and you know, Eugene says this is absolutely beautiful, and then realizes sort of why Joel's taken him there, and you know, and obviously starts begging, but Joel is, you know, that he's trying to make this as easy as possible, or as sort of, you know, give him at least something, even if he's not prepared to give him his wife. So I really like how they handled that. I thought that was a really interesting directorial choice from Neil, to not use the sound, to not show the actual gunshot, because I don't think you actually need to see it, and it makes it a lot more sort of almost peaceful than it would have done had they put any of that in camera. You know, Neil, who he's not a TV director particularly, I mean, he did do one episode of season one, and you know, he's done this now. I thought that was a wonderful choice from him.
Yeah, I completely agree with everything you just said. I also love the shot a bit afterwards of, like, there's a still shot of the water as well. Again, I'm not somebody who usually appreciates these little visual touches to things. I usually just kind of don't really care. But just the way it ties itself in this episode, I thought was really, really great. But yeah, the birds just flying off. You just, again, you don't need the gunshot. You don't need to, like, see it or whatever. You can just, you know what's happened. So, what did you think of, because I love it as well, the sort of, when Joel's trying to explain / justify sort of, I had to do this, and all the things he's explaining to Ellie, and it just kind of dawning on her even more. And again, both from Pedro and from Bella here, it's really fantastic acting, but the sort of, she's not going to turn around and look at him. She doesn't want him to see, like, her face or respond to anything he's saying, and they just eventually silently kind of walk away. What did you think of that part?
Yeah, I mean, that is when you really see the fracture happen, I think. You know, it is that, it's great acting for both of them, and it is then when you really see her going, you know, okay, he's lied to me about this to my face literally seconds ago, and, you know, minutes ago, and what else is he lying about? You know, am I right in what I think probably happened with the Fireflies? And you can see all those cogs kind of turning in her head. So it's, yeah, all of this kind of going on, and it's just yeah, it's really well done. It's great piece of work from both Pedro and Bella in this scene, and in the other scenes as well coming after this particularly.
Speaking of that, we're not done with the sad part yet. So in Jackson, Joel lies to Gail, telling her Eugene killed himself, but Ellie, realizing he had lied to her about the Fireflies years later, angrily exposes his lies to a distraught Gail. The Catherine O'Hara acting here, I mean, everybody's great in the scene, but her sort of, her slow kind of, like the way she says, get away from me and stuff, like, she's disgusted by him. I just thought it was brilliant. Lies to a distraught Gail. Just after this, Ellie says to Joel, "You swore." Just a really great moment. Man, as soon as we saw that in the, I can't remember if it was first or second trailer, and we all kind of knew what that would be related to. We didn't know, again, exactly how it would come up or like how it would work towards it. But yeah, when you see that, I think that's actually at the end of the second trailer, and like, oh damn, that's that. I love doing that with the trailers as well. Like when you watch them for the first time, and you're like, oh damn, that's that moment. That's that moment, and it just starts to come together as like a puzzle piece. Not that he does, not, I'm not talking about Gabriel, I'm talking about Tommy. Not that he does as much here, but I liked Tommy's kind of comfort inclusion as well. Like, he's sort of there to kind of just try and comfort everybody. Not that he can necessarily, because nobody really can. But yeah, again, there's just so many bits to love here about, like, Joel very calculatedly sort of and clearly kind of, yeah, this happened, and then you just get this look from Ellie of like, I just can't take this anymore, I just have to step in and say something. And that switch as well with like Gail being sort of cuddled by Joel and sort of, you know, getting the comfort there, and then it just slowly gets stripped away as Ellie reveals the actual truth, and it just flips itself around. And then her realization of, oh my god, this thing that she's just told me as opposed to what you've just told me, they're like totally different, and just get away from me. I'm just, again, I got this sense of disgust from her, which I thought was pretty perfect. This disgust of kind of, like, what have you just done? What have you just, you just, not only just what have you just done, but you've just lied to my face about it, and I just want you to get away from me. And then that's where Tommy kind of, you know, silently steps in and tries to, again, do what he can do in that scene. And just, oh man, the close up on Ellie's face, and then the way she says "you swore," and then just Joel's reaction, and damn, it's again, you nailed it. You absolutely nailed it. Mm-hmm. And it's slightly different to the game again, but again, if I don't have a problem with, obviously at this point game changes because there's been a few of them, but if I can tell what you're trying to do and what you're going for and it works well and the specific thing that you're trying to go for, you nail it, I not only not have a problem, but I appreciate the scenes anyway. So damn. I want to explain a bit of a emotional switch I had in a second, but I'll do that in a minute. What did you think of this scene?
It's brilliant because again, you're in this position where nobody is really right in what they're doing. You know, neither Ellie or Joel are particularly right in what they're doing. You know, I mean, Joel, like I said, there may have been a way to take him back, but now you are in that position and you're back. What is better for Gale to hear? Is it better to Gale for Gale to actually hear that, you know, he was okay, he didn't suffer, he shot himself, you know? That is a more comforting thing for her to hear. And it's ultimately makes zero difference, really, because, I mean, the sentiment of still there. And, I mean, if the rules say that, you know, by the book, Joel has sort of gone, okay, well, we can't take him back. From that perspective, now you're in the position that you're in. It doesn't do Gale any good to say he was begging for his life and Joel shot him, because ultimately somebody was going to have to shoot him anyway. So maybe it's kinder to do that way. So Ellie then coming out and going, he's lying, this is what happened, and it being so much harsher. But ultimately you'd end up at the same place. You know, that is really more for Ellie's benefit than it is for Gale's. You know, sometimes the truth is not necessarily the kindest thing in a situation like that, you know. It's really interesting because it puts that sort of moral question that Last of Us does so well of, like, well, is anybody really doing the right thing for the right reasons in this? So, yeah, I found that really fascinating. And it's beautifully played by both of them. You know, you could see Pedro just, you know, Bella's fantastic at sort of the venomous you swore. And I entirely get why she's angry at Joel for that, and justifiably so, because he literally swore to her face. And then you've got Joel, who's just trying to do what he thinks is the right thing. And whether we agree or not with that is another question, but he's trying to do what he thinks is the right thing and trying to do it in the kindest way that he possibly can. And so the fact that he's then, you know, not only lost Ellie, he's kind of lost Gale as well. And and it's hurt Gale a lot more than it would have done had Ellie just left it alone. It's a really interesting scene and just beautifully played by all of them, including Catherine O'Hara. I thought that was just fantastic.
Yep. No, it's just, yeah, just brilliant the way they've done this. I love the kind of, she says you swore and then walked off, and Joel's got this, like, damn kind of look on his, like, that's the moment that sort of kicks it in for him. It's fantastic. I want to explain what happened to me after this. So I'm watching this was one of the other scenes I cried at again, and literally, and this happened on the first, second, and third watch. Again, it's amazing that they were able to just get this out of me. And then, because you then cut to the party, which is much happier memories, and I see Dina dancing, and I see this song that, you know, I've got on my phone and I listen to, and things like that, and it brings up much more happy memories. My face literally kind of swung itself from whatever it was doing to, like, oh, here's a really happy part of The Last of Us. And it didn't feel like a tonal whiplash. It feels more like a tonal shift, and it kind of, I know I complimented Last of Us before for doing this in terms of when you go from happy to sad or sad to happy or whatever way around. I didn't notice myself doing that as much until maybe the second watch, and then realized I sort of did that in the first one. But it's this, you're going from this, oh my god, Ellie's just revealed the sort of you swore, and it's not explicitly explained there, but you know what that means. And then, oh yeah, I remember this happy dance thing, but it's not like this, I don't feel like I've been spun around or something and be like, hey, here's this completely eternal different thing, go. I just thought that worked excellently, and then just started smiling when I knew what the scene was taking it back to. Anyway, following the New Year's party where Dina dances and Tommy puts Benjamin to bed, Tommy says, "See you next year," to Joel, and Maria thanks Joel and apologises for her previous refugee comment. I didn't realise this till my second watch, but I believe that is the last thing that Tommy and Joel say to each other. Because after this, there's the porch bit, then they all go to sleep, and then the next morning, it was, which was the start of, what was it, episode 2, Joel lets Ellie sleep in. She goes on patrol with Jesse for a bit, and then it was, well, it wasn't Tommy, was it? It was Joel and, was it Joel and Dina who then went on patrol? It was something like that.
Yes.
But it wasn't, it wasn't, yeah, after the see you next year, I don't think in, again, in this chronological story, I don't think they see each other again after this, which they had no idea would happen.
Not that we know of. Yes, no.
Yeah, yeah. So, and then I like the little Maria addition here, because they're having, you know, a really nice family moment. What was it Joel gets called? Uncle Grumpy or something? That was
Uncle Grumpy, yeah. Yeah,
that was quite good. And then you see a little bit more of Benjamin as well. And then, yeah, Maria kind of apologises. What do you think of this nice little scene?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's I always find that kind of interesting when you go back and revisit a scene that you've seen earlier, but you're seeing slightly different perspectives of it. I thought that was kind of interesting how they weaved that all in. You know, we see the sort of, you know, Joel pushing Seth over and Ellie getting mad at him. You know, you see that bit again, but you've got these other little bits of, you know, this sort of family moment and the sort of Uncle Grumpy bit. But I think, yeah, it's just really kind of lovely. And yeah, I think you're probably right. That is possibly the last time that the two of them spoke to each other, as far as we're aware anyway.
At least they said something nice to each other. That's at least...
Well, yeah.
You know, because people talk a lot about, like, your last words to a person or all that sort of thing. But there you go. Switching back round to seeing the rest of the porch scene, Ellie joins Joel on his porch. She did indeed turn back around. She did walk back onto that porch and start this wild conversation. Ellie joins Joel on his porch. She demands to know the truth of what happened with the Fireflies. Joel tearfully admits he killed the Fireflies to save Ellie's life, preventing them from finding a cure. Ellie, enraged, says he selfishly took away her life's purpose. Joel admits he has no regrets. He loves her and tells her that he hopes she will do better with her own children. Again, feeding back into the beginning of the episode. And she says she doesn't know if she can forgive him, but she is willing to try. I when I first watched this scene, I just absolutely lost it. I'm trying to think the last time I got that emotional. Like, I was... What's the word? What's the word I used in the spoiler-free review? Bawling, I think it was. like I was in stages as well. And I noticed kind of on my second and third watch, like when Ellie starts crying more and she starts having more of an emotional reaction. Again, it's my attachment to this material. It's kind of because once they went back to even as far back as going from Youth War to the dance, I was like, we are doing the porch scene. I could tell from like that part that okay, there's no other reason for you to really go back to this scene apart from to do the rest of the porch. And I was like, oh, I was right. But again, it makes sense for TV. But I realized it then, and then kind of just again, slightly different from the game. In the game, it's more of a conversation, but I love the changes in terms of all she kind of needed from him was the nods and the head and the head shakes of like, okay, did this happen, did this bit happen, and he just, because you can tell he can't even bring himself to speak, because he's just so he's just so distraught. And in terms of revisiting this moment for himself, and again going back to Sarah and everything else, which, speaking of Sarah, there's one little moment I forgot to mention that I wanted to bring up. You know when Eugene's talking to Joel, and I think Joel says something like, hey, if you love someone so much, you can see their face whenever you want. That must have been a reference to Sarah. as well.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah,
so I again thought that tied in really well with that. But just what this entire thing means for Joel and going back to Sarah and his broken fatherhood and his watch and everything else. And again, for me, it's kind of she either has a very good guess or outright knows what's going on, but still wants him to explain it. And then just from that moment of my life would have meant something and all this sort of thing. Yeah, just absolutely incredible. I also saw a video with Neil, and he was like, okay, this is like really, really important for us to get. And he was kind of saying about how after they'd kind of finished filming it, he looked around and everybody was kind of crying. And that was when he knew he got it right. So again, I think it makes complete sense to move this here, because this is like near the end of the game. As a particular reason it's sort of brought up later. But I don't think for TV, because if you are going to do season four, and Craig did kind of say this week in interviews that like, oh, he might need season four, which absolutely fine by me. I was kind of was under the assumption that you would maybe do that anyway. Because if you're then waiting about 4 years and like, hey, remember an episode... which episode? In episode one, when you wondered if she'd turned around, turns out 4 years later, two seasons later, in an episode, you see the rest of this. It's not that it wouldn't work; it's just the time differences and stuff. But then again, as I've been saying in my predictions podcast, why don't you include like the whole thing here? Because then you can do the birthday thing. You can do the Yusuf scene, which isn't explicitly part of the birthday. Flashbacks, and then you do all these bits and you just give us a big Joel Ellie episode. And again, for TV adapting, I think it just makes complete sense to do that. So man, there's yeah, anyway, what did you think of this scene?
it's a stunning end to this scene, and I mean, regardless of where it was in the game, it just flows perfectly in this.
Yeah,
it really does. You know, because we're having these sort of key events, mainly the birthdays, but I mean the new year, this was a New Year's party, and then the sort of turning around on the porch after. I mean, it makes perfect sense that it fits in here. And just the acting between the two of them, the way Pedro has placed Joel here, where, like you say, he can't even talk. You know, I mean, he says in the notes that he sort of admits to killing the fly, but he doesn't really. He just sort of, I think, nods slightly. He doesn't say anything, and the words just aren't there. And I mean, it's unbelievably well done and so emotional, and it's a stunning bit of the scene, this, and finally sort of resolves that sort of plot point of how much did she know. And I mean, she guessed most of it, but she wants to actually know whether she's right. It's just stunning from start to finish, that scene particularly.
I love the line as well from Joel about like, because she, fair enough to her, says like, no, you did it because you were selfish, and he's like, no, I did it because I love you, and in a way that you'll never understand. And even in the few conversations they've had about Sarah, because that's Sarah's still a very, very, very deep wound for him. And because I think he meant it in terms of that, in terms of like, not that he ever like needs to say more about that, but kind of hinting that sort of, I can never truly explain to you like that area of things. And that was just the best way for him to kind of say it. So yeah, that was, what did you think of that line? Cause that was a bit of a newer one included in there.
Right. Yeah. I think it is a mixture of, the fact that he's lost one child, the fact that he sees Ellie as his child and she doesn't have kids, and you know, she's whether she's likely to have her own kids is sort of, you know, possibly even less likely in this sort of environment as well. So it's one of those things that I think, you know, he is, as well as talking about, yeah, there is a hint of the loss of Sarah in there. I think, you know, that is certainly part of it. And, but also, you know, the parent love for the child. And, the fact that I think those two things combined puts him in a very unique position. And, it's really good writing. It's a stunning scene. And, I mean, what a way to, well, almost end the episode off.
As we're both trying to say, it's a phenomenal scene, directing, writing, acting. And again, there's a few little new lines, like the I love you part. But then, still just represents what the game did so, so well. And it's great that it's in here. And then the actual last scene of the episode, I like how they've done this twice as well, the kind of setting us up for where we're going next. In 2029, after torturing Nora, Ellie is returning to the theatre. Always cool to see the shot of the theatre from the outside, and to also, the rain effects, I think, add something quite nice. Anything to say about the last little snippet of the episode?
No, other than it was quite dark. I actually watched the episode this morning, and it was quite dark, that scene. I was trying to work out what it actually was, because I couldn't quite tell. The lights were up, and I was like, where is that her? I can't see where she's going. Clearly it's her, you know, back in the present day. But I hadn't realized exactly what that was until, like, I saw the notes. So yes.
But I like, with the last episode and with this one, like, you deal with the episode's plot and then a little kind of, okay, we finished with that bit, this is where we're going, just to kind of set you for it, I think
I think it was really good how they did that last episode and how they've sort of, you know, put it back on this episode. So you're not coming in like, oh, where are we, you know, when you pick up next week's episode. You know, I think it's nice to have that little tag on there. I think it worked well.
Certainly. All right, so move on to some feedback, some emails. If you'd like to write in for the finale or for any more predictions episodes, because even if you've got predictions about episode 7, I can still reflect on them when I go to do that episode. And then any predictions for next season, any sort of feedback, predictions, or anything else, Matthew at entertainmenttalk.org, social media, eTalk, you care, Entertainment Talk, and there's information in your show notes. Warren says, it was excellent to see Pedro back, and I heard that's supposed to be it for him. Will we not see any more flashbacks or anything at all? They did do a bit of a kind of, like, I'm not sure if they said season or series wrap on Pedro, but of course Joel is still dead, so which I think, again, is why you kind of did all the flashbacks in one bit. I'll just say that, like, okay, if you ever need bits of Pedro for later, there's plenty of, like you could see flashes or flashback bits of him later, but I think it might be from stuff we've already had. So in terms of, like, Pedro filming stuff, I think he's completely finished with that, but that doesn't mean that you'll, because again, they could come up with new stuff or other bits and pieces. So while you could see Joel in season 3 or season 4, I don't think it will be new scenes, if that makes sense. What do you think of that?
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if they ended up getting him back, maybe. If they do a fourth season, if they end up putting him back in for something, some sort of additional sort of one day of filming flashback kind of thing, just so you maybe have a moment with him and Ellie, possibly, as a flashback scene that is something new, just so you can sort of put Pedro back in there and put Joel back in there. Then, I mean, it is possible that they may do that somewhere down the line. I mean, it would be a bit fan servicey, but I do wonder whether they'll do that. But I think in terms of big full episode things, I think, yeah, this is probably the last we've seen of him. You know, I mean, it is something that, TV shows will do for, you know, finales and things. They will bring back, you know, show flashbacks of dead characters or right, whatever. Right. And I mean, you know, and I'm sure Pedro will be happy to come back and do, you know, a day's filming to film a scene to add in somewhere if he's, you know, not too busy with the million other projects that he's got going on at the moment. But
everybody wants him, so I
don't think we're going to see him back for any large stretches like, you know, this episode again. I mean, who knows, if they do go to four seasons, it's entirely possible you could have something, you know, maybe the we've talked about doing some sort of Tommy and Joel thing, you know, if there's a reason to put that in at some point. But I don't see him coming back particularly for anything huge.
Again, like I said, unless it's for brand new parts, which neither game or TV audiences are aware of, it could be those bits, but we'll see. Casey says, I think this episode proved Bella's range, certainly with all the different age scenes. Have you come across, then it says, have you come across The Last of Us 2 sub? yeah, a few people have, it seems. And so for anybody who doesn't know what that's about, and I don't recommend that you go look at that, it's a very nasty place where the... And they're not fans. You're not a fan of something if you're doing that. Now, you can be a fan of something and not enjoy its current direction or something like that, like Man United. But there's a difference, and there's not even a fine line, there's just an outright difference between you are just poking and essentially bullying either the people that are on the show, making the show, in and around the show, whatever. That's basically what that subreddit is. It's called The Last of Us Part 2 or Last of Us 2. If you accidentally come across it, you'll know what it is within a few minutes of scrolling. I have actually messaged them, not that I expected to get anything out of it, but I messaged the moderator, and not just to say, like, hey, your sub is doing what it's doing, but I said to them, like, your sub is starting to get noticed on, like, I'm hearing it on different podcasts, different people are bringing it up. I see people on, like, Twitter and Facebook bringing it up. And I was like, you're kind of becoming, not famous, but well-known for having an abusive subreddit. Did you care about that? What do you think of that? And all they basically said to me was, hey, if you see any bad posts, can you please report them? And I thought, okay, if I do that, I'm gonna be here all day reporting them all. So there are nicer ones you can go to. There's probably half a dozen different Last of Us subreddits, but if you're curious, you can look at it if you want to, but I wouldn't recommend that as a thing. You told me you found that as well, didn't you?
Yeah, because I mean, I am on Reddit, and I didn't stumble onto the subreddit directly. It was like I was on another thread about The Last of Us, and I happened to be reading that, and somebody mentioned The Last of Us 2 subreddit, and they were like, don't go there, it's a horribly toxic place. So out of morbid curiosity, I went to take a look, and yes, it is one of the most toxic fan subreddits, I use fan in air quotes, that I've ever seen. I mean, it is horrifically abusive to some of the cast, and it's like a parody of itself. I mean, just awful, awful place. There are much, much nicer places where you can actually discuss the show, and they have sensible discussions about the show. And we're not saying you can't criticize it, because, you know, absolutely any show that is out there, you can make criticisms of. But there is a difference between genuine criticism and just being hateful and bullying towards the stars of the show, which is what that subreddit seems to have devolved into. And it's just horrible. So I would tell people to definitely avoid that one. Go on to Reddit and go and have a look around. There are other Last of Us subreddits, but that one in particular, as you said, Matt, you will know within seconds of being on there whether you've hit the really, really toxic one, because it will be very, very obvious very, very quickly. But yes, we have both, I think, stumbled across that at one point or another, and it's not somewhere we'll be going back to.
No, No. So, congratulations. Somebody else noticed you.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, there is. It might not feel like it sometimes because the internet can be what the internet is. But there are positive places you can go to, including here as well. So,
yeah.
There we go. Josh is next. Writes, I thought this episode was good, but just reminded me of how important Joel is to the story. I'm not so far seeing/understanding the hype surrounding part two. Well, there's one key element to that, which is I'm assuming you haven't played the game, for judging by that comment. You haven't seen the whole story yet, but I mean, you can judge from what you've seen from these six episodes so far. That is totally fair. I'm just saying you haven't seen the rest of it, so you can't judge the whole of it. I've come across, you know, plenty of people that said, like, hey, this is pretty good. I get what they're going for, but it just didn't click with them, didn't stick with them, whatever. And that's, again, like you said, criticism. That's totally fair criticism if you can kind of... And I do think it's important for any media, whether it's game, show, film, or indeed book, that if, let's say the creator, writer, whatever, tries to get something particular across to you, and you don't, not because you're stupid or something, but maybe you didn't get what they were aiming for, but if what somebody's trying to tell you in the story doesn't quite click with you, and you maybe didn't understand the angle they were going for, then it's not going to work in that way. But then you got the other angle, which, if you understand what a showrunner, writer, director, whatever is getting across to you, particularly with a particular story like this, I suppose, which has its themes and things like that, if you do think you completely get what they're going for and it still doesn't click with you, there's kind of just two different sort of elements. But no, that's absolutely fine. I would just say keep watching the show. I mean, we only have one more episode left of this season. But yeah, haven't seen the whole story yet, and we have quite a bit to go still. So yeah, there's a lot more for you to kind of see. But yeah, Joel is incredibly important to the story. There's been a number of times where Neil has said that, you know, this story is about these two characters, which is Joel and Ellie, which is, you know, correct, I suppose. But sometimes you lose big characters and you have to deal with that as an audience member. But no, you miss, if like you're missing Joel or something. I mean, number one, you're kind of supposed to be. But yeah, he's a big part of the story. So anyway, David, what do you think of this comment here?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Obviously, Joel is a big part of the story, and you're entirely right. I mean, there are certain shows which are recommended to me and for whatever reason don't click with me. People like different things. That's just the way it is. So, you know, I can appreciate sometimes that a show is very, very well done. For example, some of the American Horror stuff, maybe not the later seasons, but certainly some of the earlier seasons. I enjoyed the first season of it, but it lost me in the other seasons after that, and because I'm not a huge horror fan. There are a lot of people out there are. It's very, very well done, that show, but, you know, it's just not something that is particularly my jam. So, you know, I think that's fine. As for, like you say, not seeing the hype about Last of Us 2. Now, if you're talking about the hype about Last of Us 2, the game, as you say, you're only seeing bits of the story. You know, you're presumably may only be a third of the way through the story at this point. But by the time we get to the end of the third season, assuming that they are going to end up going to four seasons in total. So, I mean, there is a criticism there to say maybe there would have been a way of compressing that a little bit more and getting more of the story through, because it has moved forward fairly slowly. I mean, essentially, we've had an attack on Jackson and them going to, you know, the death of Joel, them going to go after the person that killed Joel. And that's sort of as far as we've got in that main story thread, which isn't necessarily a huge plot-wise move forward, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, no, I do. Yeah.
So, I mean, there is an argument to say you're finding it a bit slow, which you know, I mean, and that's not to criticize what they've done, because it's been masterful in terms of the actual work and the acting and the show itself. But there is an argument to say that, you know, you find it a bit slow, and fair enough. I think that would be a perfectly valid thing to say about it. So, yeah, I think it's one of those things that you sort of need to see the whole thing to be able to sort of see what the hype is about, I guess, would be the way I put it. And I think that is also the problem, is it has been hyped a lot from the game side. And, you know, so it's different. I think that's tricky, you know. Mm-hmm. But as I say, people like different things. I mean, I know people that don't gel with The Wire, for example, which is constantly hailed as one of the best TV shows ever made. So, you know, or Breaking Bad, for example, which, you know, we also say is one of the best TV shows ever made, and there's some people that just can't get into it. So, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I would also say, in terms of this, though, like, let's say you get to the end of the four seasons and you generally enjoyed it, but it didn't, you know, hype sort of click with you. It could be a case where you go and play the game, you get a different version of the same story that clicks in a different way, and then you get it, maybe. That's because they've been told the story in two different mediums, and those two different mediums have two different effects.
That is true.
You're also being told, again, I can't stress this enough, you're being told the story in a completely different sort of time length as well. Because mm-hmm. where, again, you can play the game over, say, two and a bit days or whatever, as opposed to this, which is going to have big gaps over 4 years, and then piece by piece, week by week, it's very, very different, which, again, is why it made sense to move the porch scene. So that's worth considering as well. Last here is Maxine says, I've been hesitant to write in and usually listen to the spoiler-free and spoiler reviews, as I'm not a game player. Yes, don't go in the spoiler section, because it's dangerous in there. Not a game player. It was lovely to see how moved you were by the spoiler-free review. By that. And I was right there with you. What was the secret opinion you said you've been holding on to? Oh, that was the Neil Druckmann writing thing, because I kind of teased that it clicked more and more. But then from watching this episode, which specifically has Neil and, of course, the other two as well, writing but also directing, it's got more of his fingerprints on this episode as opposed to the other five. Not to say, like, he just left Craig to it and didn't get involved. Obviously, he's been involved and whatever, but this has got more of his DNA all over it. And because what I wanted to then do was, okay, I watched this episode the first time. My opinion was leaning even more in that direction of, like, the human writing stuff and all that bit that I talked about, and then thought, okay, when I do my next two watches, see how that still sits with me, and it still sat the same way. So that was the sort of, if you want to call it, secret opinion that I was holding on to. But again, I even for all of the Last of Us stuff that I had gone through, that didn't start properly brewing in my brain until I replayed Uncharted 4 just a few weeks ago. So it's got a bit of a newer opinion, but I think maybe the reason I noticed it there is because I was consuming something and getting a refresher on it that was still Neil Druckmann, but it wasn't Last of Us, it was something else, and that was kind of where I noticed that more, I suppose. Any thoughts on anything there?
No, I mean, I just say that the Uncharted series is one of the few full game series which I've actually played from start to finish. You know, which, I mean, if you're talking about Druckmann's kind of writing, mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that sort of says something. And I I've not picked up the second Last of Us game. I enjoyed the first one, but I don't enjoy those horror type games and zombie type games as much as you do. But Uncharted is much more my kind of jam. Mm-hmm. And you know, credit to Druckmann's writing, I played through every iteration of that, and I literally sort of back to back played them pretty much from start to finish. So, you know, I think you're right. I think he is one of the best writers out there, certainly in the video game world. And then in this, he shows he can direct, shows he can write TV. And then when you pair him with Craig Mazin, who is a phenomenal writer as well. I mean, that's why this show is so good, is those two guys. So,
Yeah, and all the other people as well. So,
well, yes, and the casting and whoever the casting director was, and you know, all the other people involved in it. So,
You know, I reflect on all, obviously, a lot of all this, but when I sometimes have these little realizations while I'm watching, when I'm watching the episode, that like, okay, people can, you know, debate about, okay, could this have been better in this, that, other way, or whatever else. But looking at what we've actually got as opposed to what we could have maybe had, because we could have ended up with something worse. It's very easy to do. We've seen it happen a lot of times.
Uncharted film, for example.
yes. But what I mean as well is, like, not that I doubt, let's say, Sam Raimi's ability, but the way that Last of Us film has been described just sounds like something so much worse than what this ended up being. So,
yes,
again, that could have ended up getting created, it could have been worse, and then maybe we would have never got this adaption. Because then Sony could have maybe looked at it and gone, well, you just tried to adapt that, it didn't work, it fell flat on its face, so why would we try it again? And then maybe we would never have got any of this. Because that probably happens to all of us in terms of fans of when things get adapted and you're watching something, and you're like, why can't this thing just be better than what, you know, especially for something that's got really great source material, and you look at other adaptions of things, and you're like, why isn't this just should be better than what it is? Obviously, not talking about Last of Us, I'm talking about other things. Yeah, sometimes, even if some of you out there are feeling more, let's say, more nitpicky or more critical, which you're entitled to do, sometimes you should just be grateful for what you do have on the screen, because just know it could have been worse. It could have been much worse. Like, you could have had, maybe, let's say, if Craig Mazin turn around and be like, okay, no, I'm not working on this, you know, stupid zombie thing or something like that, and then maybe you get someone different, and then, you know, it just could have ended up a lot worse. So there we go. All right, that's it for this week's episode. It just dawned on me, next week is the season finale. I can't quite believe that. But yes, the season finale, we'll be back for season 3, both us and the show. But we're not there yet. We've got one more episode left. And for those of you who are game players, or spoilers don't affect you, whether it's cutscenes, whatever that you've watched, again, my spoiler predictions are out there for the finale. Some more refreshed ones, given that we have the information from this episode. So make sure you check that out as well before Sunday's season finale. There's no point in me doing predictions here, because that won't work. David, any last minute predictions for the finale? Anything
absolutely
you think might happen?
Absolutely no clue. Other than, I mean, presumably, I presume that there is some sort of confrontation between Ella and the person that they were going after,
Abby.
Yes, yeah. The name went out of my head. Presumably there is some confrontation between those two. That would seem like a logical place to maybe end this season. I don't know that, but that would be my guess. Would be those two meeting again in some form. But I don't know. I honestly have no clue. So how do you, because the story obviously goes beyond that. So I don't know where you went this season.
Yeah, we have another one, maybe another two. So we'll see where it goes. Anyway, thank you all very much for listening. You can, of course, support everything that we do on entertainmenttalk.org, TV, games, films, main night podcast. Look out for all of those when they happen. You can support us, of course, by listening to more things that we make, word of mouth, social media, and if someone mentions something we podcasted on, please tell them about the podcast. For that, Patreon, $5, $10 level tiers, ad-free podcast review options for that as well. If you like to, TV and film news, Geek Town Radio Tuesdays, and geektown.co.uk. David, that is yours. What is going on over there?
Oh, right. Well, you were on Geek Town Radio this week. So that episode is up, and we talked about Thunderbolts. We talked about the return of Jessica Jones to, or well, the addition of Jessica Jones, I suppose I should say, to the MCU. We talked about Friends as well.
Mm-hmm.
You did a review of that. SWAT Exiles, which the show that will never die, is returning for another spin-off series, plus lots of air dates in there. Talk about Buffy and Sesame Street and Fallout and Welcome to Wrexham. There's lots and lots of stuff in that episode. So that's episode 461 of Geek Town Radio. You can get that on there. And speaking of the sort of big shows, and one that is actually at the end of its run, Handmaid's Tale, that has obviously got its sixth season, which is running in the UK, and I think is still running in the US. We're a little bit behind in the UK at the moment. It's on Channel 4 and Prime Video. I interviewed the supervising sound editor for that and the sound designer and sound effects editor. So then the supervising sound editor covers the ADR and the dialogue editing and all that sort of stuff. So there is a behind the scenes podcast for that, talking about the sound design and sound editing and effects work and stuff for Handmaid's Tale, which is really, really fascinating. They were great to talk to. So both of them on one podcast, it's about half an hour. That is on the Geek Town Radio podcast feed, which you can find wherever you get your podcast by searching for Geek Town Radio, and also on the website at geektown.co.uk. And there have been a lot of air dates and stuff going up on the main website as well. So you can find that, of course, at Geek Town. geektown.co.uk as well.
Excellent. So, yeah, go to Geek Town Radio on Tuesdays. Look out for that on that day. And go to geektown.co.uk for interviews and news and all the other good stuff as well. Plus, you just went through all the TV bloodbath stuff. So, go and check if your favourite show is safe.
Should also mention, yes, TV bloodbath stuff. So that's all up on the website. And it is MCN Comic Con in London this weekend as well. So both myself and Daryl, one of the podcast co-hosts, will be down there. If you happen to see somebody wandering around in a Geek Town T-shirt some of the days, you just say hello. We'll be wandering around on that. So we'll be usually sat recording panels, or you know, we'll be in the press room and around on the main floor. So yes, we will be around MCM Comic Con if you want to say hello there.
Cool. So yeah, go and check in with all that stuff. For us as well, you can find us on YouTube, which is called Entertainment Talk Plays, for just the video game bits, the video game stuff. So check that out, and we'll see you next week. I'll see you all on Sunday for the spoiler-free review on Sunday for that, and we'll see what the finale brings us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.